Welcome to the Spoolcast. Aviva Rosenstein joins Adam Churchill in this follow-up to her virtual seminar, Making UX Work with Agile Scrum Teams. Aviva didn't have time to answer all the questions during the seminar, so we decided to address those remaining questions in this podcast. If you didn't attend the seminar, don't worry, there's plenty here for you too. And now, here's Adam.
Welcome everyone to this episode of The Spoolcast. Recently, Aviva Rosenstein presented a virtual seminar for a super engaged audience. It's called Making UX Work with Agile Scrum Teams. The recording of the seminar, along with 180 other UX seminars, are now part of UIE's All You Can Learn. Where does design fit into sprints? How do companies let go of waterfall methodology? If you're struggling to confidently and clearly answer either of those questions, then this seminar is one you should certainly check out. In it, Aviva shares how to clarify roles and responsibilities and more effectively track and estimate UX work. There are case studies of companies that brought teams together to work more collaboratively, iteratively, and harmoniously in an agile process. We had lots of questions from a super audience and just couldn't get to them all. So in today's podcast, Aviva was able to join us and we're going to discuss some of those questions that came in from the audience during the seminar. Hey, Aviva, thanks for joining us.
Hi, Adam. It's great to be here.
So those that maybe weren't with us for your seminar that are listening now, can you give us an overview of what you talked about that day?
Sure. Well, the presentation was based on some research that I did a while back on what challenges people were facing working with agile teams. So I sent a survey around to several of my peers and colleagues to find out what was working well for them in their relationship with agile teams and what wasn't working out so well. And what was amazing is that I found that for every problem that one person or two people or three people raised, some other person had an idea that they had found that worked well to solve that problem. So it was clear that there were some common problems that plagued UX in agile teams, and there were also a number of solutions that people had found that were effective for addressing that. So the presentation covers both those kind of patterns where things get a little wonky, as well as some of the ideas that people had come up to address them. And those ranged from people saying that they weren't communicating well with their development team, or they didn't feel valued in the organization, or they didn't feel like they were doing things at the right time, or they weren't really sure what practices worked in the Scrum timeframe. So if you listen to the seminar, you'll get to hear some of the ideas that people had recommended that had worked for them.
Let's get to some of those questions that were left over. The U.S. Bank team, the UX team there, had this question. There are many teams who are simply comfortable with a waterfall process. How do you get those same teams comfortable with Agile and Scrum?
You know, change is hard. It doesn't matter what you're changing from or to. The best way to get people comfortable is to make sure that they have appropriate expectations and that they feel like they have some skills that they're going to need. So part of it is helping them clarify what everybody's roles are, what they're expected to do, what's going to happen next. Some of it may be training them on specific techniques that will work in that agile context. So I think what's scary is when you're making these big changes and people have all this fear and uncertainty and doubt about what's going to happen and will things work well. They may have heard some stories from other people that were negative, but you can diffuse that with good training and addressing things head on. One of the things I think that was really apparent from the interviews that I conducted were that designers sometimes weren't comfortable with talking to developers and vice versa. They were using similar terms for completely different processes and would miscommunicate a lot. And just by helping them get to know each other and clarifying their roles to each other, that made everybody a lot more comfortable with doing Scrum just because they knew what to expect for themselves and from their peers. And it also helped them understand that developers and designers were really all on the same team. They weren't competing with each other. One wasn't in service of the other. They were really teammates. And that kind of an understanding really helped people feel comfortable.
Carrie made a comment. She said, it sounds as if requirements are pretty well defined before this agile process begins. Is that accurate?
I wish it was. In an ideal world, that would be accurate. But I don't think any of us work in that ideal world. There is this concept in Agile called the definition of ready, which is that before a development team accepts work into a sprint, the work meets certain criteria for readiness. It needs to be estimable. You need to be able to understand how long something is going to take. You have to understand when it fits in. It has to be clear to the development team what it is that they're doing. A lot of times, development teams will not realize that they can push back on user stories that aren't really ready for development. And the UX vision, understanding the users and their needs, understanding what it is exactly that you're building, that needs to be clarified in order for the teams to be taking on work that has a UI component. So ideally, the requirements are pretty clear-cut before the Scrum begins. That's not the whole Agile process. So there are certain kinds of requirements, like, you know, who are the users and what are we doing? What are we building? What's our strategy? Those kinds of things should be fairly well designed before the development team starts its iterations.
We had a number of attendees ask about what I'll call the overlapping nature of the sprints. If the designers are working sprints ahead, then how much time are they also spending on the current sprint? In other words, are they working with the team or just kind of evaluating the team's output when they get to what was designed multiple sprints back in the process? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And it really varies. There's no easy answer. It depends a lot on the composition of the team. It depends a lot on the nature of the project that's being worked on or where it is in its project lifecycle. But I didn't get a chance to talk about this during the seminar, but Desiree Tsai, in her book, she has this great visual model of the flow between design and development. She separates it out as, you know, there's a developer track and an interaction designer track. That's one way to do it. It's not necessarily the only way to do it. But she kind of points out that there's the staggering that happens where in any given cycle, the designers are probably designing a sprint ahead of the developers in terms of getting the wireframes ready or the flow ready so that the developers can implement that. But at the same time, they may also be reviewing code from the last cycle or testing code that was developed in the last cycle. So there's these little handoffs that happen. It's less of a waterfall and more of a cataract. If you can imagine little small streams crossing, in terms of how much time they're spending on each component, that really depends on where they are in the process and the nature of the design. It also depends on the composition of the team. If you have a dedicated user researcher on the team, they may be spending most of their time doing write testing. We can get to that later. Doing iterative testing on prototypes or wireframes before they get into development, or they may be testing code that actually was created in the last cycle. So there's always these handoffs. If there's an interaction designer and there's no dedicated user researcher, then the amount of time that they're spending on things might differ.
Zeke wants to know where you've seen research and usability testing fit into the Agile process.
It's a great question. As a user researcher, that one's really close to my heart. So the thing about doing usability testing in Write, or any kind of user research in Write, is that you want to be doing it the right time. So if you're trying to understand customer needs so that you can set your UX strategy, you want to get that done before development starts. Some people use a sprint zero for that. Some people will use something called a spike, which is a concept from XP that's kind of outside the context of the sprint cycle. But the idea is that you're understanding your user needs, you're developing your personas, you're clarifying all that stuff outside the context of the sprint. The next thing is that you want to be testing things before they're actually coded and built, because it's really expensive to refactor things that don't work. So how do you do that? You do that through doing iterative testing on low fidelity wireframes to high fidelity prototypes. Depending on, you know, what skill set you have on your team, you might have somebody who's really good at Axure who can build a pretty high fidelity interactive prototype outside of the context of the development sprint and iterate on that quickly with user feedback. There's a technique called the write method that came out of Microsoft's Game Studio, that it stands for Rapid Iterative Testing and Evaluation. And it's basically a way of getting things in front of users for feedback and observing very closely where they have problems and making changes very quickly in response to those problems, so that you're not conducting a whole usability test with 5 to 8 users and then making changes, but you're making changes right away and then validating those changes with the next set of testers. And you can do that a sprint ahead of the developers, so that when you're handing off the designs for implementation, it's already been vetted by representatives of your user base. That's one place to do it. There are other places that you can do user research along the way. You can do quick experiments. You can, if there are different ideas for design and the design team is trying to figure out, do we go in this direction or in that direction, you might want to do a quick click test experiment, or even do a card sorts before you get ready for fixing a design and information architecture. That can all happen a sprint or two ahead of the developer implementing those designs.
The Grubhub Chicago team had this question. Can you give some examples of UX tasks that are estimated?
Yeah, so I'm mostly going to talk about user research ones because those are the ones I know the best. But I've found it's really useful to use t-shirt size estimation sizing. So for me, if I know something is going to take half a day, that's small. If I know something is going to take maybe 2 weeks, that's large. If I know something might actually take a month to get done or longer, that might be extra large. So some examples of that. Your standard usability test is usually takes a week of effort, although it takes 2 weeks start to finish, from the time where you know who you're going to recruit and to the time where you can deliver some findings. So that's basically a large study for me. If I'm doing an experiment, that might take more like 4 days. That might be a medium estimate. And the reason that I like t-shirt size sizing is it's a little bit different than what the developer teams are using for estimation. So you're not confusing your sizing with their sizing. But it helps set expectations for how much work you can take on in a particular sprint. So if you know that you're going to be dedicated to something over 2 weeks, but it's only going to take a week's worth of effort, then you can fit in some other exercises as well that might be small to medium in that two-week cycle.
Mr. Montoya wants to know some best practices for documenting design in this process.
So the best practices are very dependent on your circumstance. If you are sitting with your developers, if you're all in the same row or in the same floor, the best practices are going to be very different from if you're working with an offshore team. If you're working with an offshore team, if your handoffs are to somebody that's working in a completely different track, you're going to be needing to do more documentation at a higher level of fidelity than if you're right next to somebody and you can just show them or talk something out or work at a whiteboard together. The idea is right-sizing the amount of documentation to your circumstance. So there's no easy answers here. There's no best practices that work across the board. I think using your common sense and trying to find ways to eliminate unnecessary documentation But if you need documentation because you're working with someone offshore or in a different part of the country, whatever it is, by all means, Agile doesn't mean don't document. It means that working code is more effective than the documentation. So from a design perspective, what that often means for my teams is that a working prototype that's been commented out somehow is often the most effective kind of deliverable. So somebody will build a prototype and then accompany the prototype with a list of bullet points with more details about things that aren't spec'd out in the prototype. And that way people can actually play with the prototype and see how things are supposed to work and have their attention called to what's important in the design that they might not think of just from looking at it. And that seems to be a really effective way of doing this work. But that only works, again, if you've got somebody on your team who's good at prototyping. If you can learn how to prototype, if you can get up to speed on prototyping, it will solve so many problems for you on your team.
Chuck asks, what's the development team's role in UX design? And he followed that up with, how do you handle technology limits in UX design?
It's a really interesting couple of questions, because the answer to the second half of that question, how do you handle technology limits, kind of begs the first question, is what's their role? So developers and designers are on the same team. Even if they're working in slightly different tracks, they're all working together to develop and ship product. And everybody's opinion is relevant. Developers often don't have a good sense of what the designer's roles are. And so making sure everybody understands each other's roles is important. But even more important is understanding that anybody on the team may have a good design idea. It's not limited to interaction designers or visual designers. The developers may have great ideas about how the technology could be used that didn't even occur to design because they hadn't worked with that technology before and weren't as familiar with it. So their role is they're recommenders. They get to make suggestions. They may come up with ideas for improvements as a team decides which direction to go. Now, where I've seen things go wonky is when the design team hands off some kind of specification and the developers then on their own initiative make changes to it without discussing it with the designers first. And sometimes they're great ideas, and sometimes they miss the mark because they're not thinking of users in the same way. So it's important for the developers and the designers to have open channels of communication so they can check on each other's work and make sure that any suggestions for changes are workable ones. There's this idea of pair programming in extreme programming, which I kind of like to steal the idea of a designer and a developer sitting next to each other, sharing a screen and working things out together. So the iterations then are very short because you're next to that person. So the developers will say, what would happen if we did this instead? And the designer can say, huh, that's an interesting idea, except then this other thing won't work so well, or users may not see that particular affordance. Or the developer might make a suggestion and the designer would say, oh, wow, I'd never thought of that. That would be awesome. Let's do that. So the role is everybody's a colleague. Everybody shares ideas. The end goal is to support the business and support the users.
Aviva, the team at CapTech Consulting makes this comment that success metrics are more easily defined for existing products. And they're wondering, are there UX success measures for new products?
There are a set of measures that I like to use. At the end of the day, success is what the business has defined success is. Often if they're doing something like, you know, a net promoter score or customer satisfaction, that's not going to work so well when you're at the prototype stage, when things don't really work yet well. But there are some metrics that are really useful. And basically they're based on the work that was done on the 80s with the system usability scale. Is it useful Is it effective? Is it usable? Those kinds of questions can be asked even when something's in development. So I'll often use a scale with a Likert scale, like 1 to 5 agreement scale. This was easy to learn, or I had to learn a lot of things to get going with this design, or this design integrates well with the way I ordinarily work, or this is something that I expect to use frequently. Those kinds of statements are very useful in the context of evaluating a design in testing. And I actually use those scales not as hard and fast metrics, but as ways of prompting people to talk about their reaction. So I'll ask the question, you know, on a scale of 1 to 5, how well would you agree with the statement, I had to learn a lot of things before I could get going with the system? And then based on their answer, I'll ask them, well, why did you give it that score? And I get more information about their explanation than I am for the actual metric. At the end of the day, could they finish the task? And did they like the experience as they did it? Those are probably the most useful metrics of success.
So let's wrap up with talking a bit more about everybody being on the team. Nicholas asks, can a dedicated UX design team work successfully with product development teams in this Scrum environment?
I'm not entirely sure what the person who asked that question meant by a dedicated UX team. There are different models for structuring UX in an organization. Sometimes it's to have design integrated with their development teams. And so that ends up being kind of a matrix because they work with and are dedicated to a particular development team, but they still have a relationship with the other designers on the team, and they still may be managed by a design manager. They just spend more time with the people who are working on the product that they're supporting. Or it could be arranged where there's some kind of centralized team that gets loaned out to particular projects. And both of them can work. I actually think that design is most successful when it's to some degree embedded in the Scrum team as a dedicated resource for the period of the release, but it can work both ways. The point is to make sure that you've got really clear understanding of what people's responsibilities are and that they're not trying to support multiple teams at the same time that are going to need the same level of support at the same time, because then they will run into conflicts. You want the designers to be able to attend some of the stand-up meetings. You want them to be able to attend the sprint retrospectives. You want them to be considered part of the Scrum team. So however you can set that up, whether it's a dedicated team that occasionally hangs out with other designers, or whether it's a bunch of designers that occasionally hang out with developers, you know, however you structure that, as long as people are communicating effectively, then it's all good.
And can you say a bit more about that as it pertains to global UX teams?
You know, I think what you gain from a global UX team is you gain the ability to look across the designs and patterns for the entire organization and help each other by creating some consistent design patterns, by making it possible for people to avoid reworking things that there's already good solutions to. And so there's somebody who needs to be managing that process and sharing that information. But where the UX team is going to be most effective is working closely with design. So they need to have a foot in both worlds. They need to have a foot in what's happening with their particular product and getting ready for their particular ship date, and maybe occasionally looking ahead or forward or behind to, you know, how can we take the patterns that we've created for this project and share them with our colleagues globally? Or what problems do we know that we're going to have to solve that we want to get input from other people on the team from? It's kind of a challenge, but it's really helpful to have somebody at the management level who can look across and share information between teams.
Very good. Aviva, thanks for spending some more time with us.
Oh, it was great. It was my pleasure.
To everyone listening in, thanks for doing so and for your support of the UIE Virtual Seminar Program. Goodbye for now.
You can access the recordings of all of our past virtual seminars as part of UIE's All You Can Learn. For more information, visit aycl.uie.com. That's aycl.uie.com. As always, thanks for listening.